This is Audible.
Listening Library presents Squirm by Carl Hiaasen. Read for you by Kirby Hayborn. 1. This one kid, he got kicked out of school. That's not easy to do. You need to break some actual laws. We heard lots of rumors, but nobody gave us the straight story. The kid's name was Jammer, and I got his locker. Who knows what he kept in there, but he must have given out the combination to half the school. Kids were always messing with my stuff when I wasn't around. So I put a snake inside the locker. Problem solved. It was an eastern diamondback, a serious reptile. 8 buttons on the rattle, so it made some big noise when people opened the locker door. The freak-out factor was high. Don't worry, the rattlesnake couldn't bite. I taped its mouth shut. That's a tricky move, not for rookies. You need steady hands and zero common sense. I wouldn't try it again. The point is, I didn't want that rattler to hurt anyone. I just wanted kids to stay out of my locker, which they now do. I set the diamond back free a few miles down Grapefruit Road on the same log where I found him. It's important to exit the scene fast, because an adult rattlesnake can strike up to 1/2 of its body length. Most people don't know that, and why would they? It's not a necessary piece of information if you live a halfway normal life, which I don't. What does your dad do? I hear this question whenever we move somewhere new. My standard answer, he runs his own business. But the truth is, I don't know what my father does. He sends a check, Mom cashes it. I haven't seen the guy since I was like 3 years old, maybe 4. Does it bother me? Possibly, sure. I've done some reading about this. How it can mess up a person when his parents split, especially when one of them basically vanishes from the family scene. I don't want to be one of those screwed up kids, but I can't rule out the possibility. Mom doesn't say much about Dad. The checks always show up on time, the 10th of the month, and they never bounce. We might not be rich, but we're definitely not poor. You wouldn't believe how many pairs of shoes my sister owns. God, I give her so much grief. The way I look at it, Mom doesn't get a free pass just because she doesn't want to talk about my father. That's not what you'd call a healthy, open approach to an issue. So I stay on her case, though not in a mean way. What does he do for a living? I'll say, like I've never asked before. Well, Billy, I'm not exactly sure what he does, she'll begin in the same tight voice, but I can tell you what he doesn't do. Over time, based on my mother's commentary, I've scratched the following professions off my phantom father list. Astronaut, quantum physicist, lawyer, doctor, heavy metal guitarist, veterinarian, architect, hockey player, NASCAR driver, jockey, plumber, roofer, electrician, pilot, policeman, car salesman, and yoga instructor. Mom says Dad's too claustrophobic to be an astronaut, too lousy at math to be a quantum physicist, too shy to be a lawyer, too squeamish to be a doctor, too uncoordinated to play the guitar, too tall to be a jockey, too hyper for yoga, and so on. I don't like this game, but I'm making progress, information-wise. Mom's still touchy about the subject, so I try to take it easy. Meanwhile, my sister Belinda acts like she doesn't care, like she's not the least bit curious about the old man. This fake attitude is known as a coping mechanism, according to what I've read. Maybe my father is a psychiatrist, and one day I'll lie down on his couch and we'll sort out all this stuff together. Or not. At school, I try to keep a low profile. When you move around as much as my family does, making friends isn't practical. Leaving is easier if there's no one to say goodbye to. That much I've learned. But sometimes you're forced to interact. There's no choice. Sometimes staying low profile is impossible. The last week of school, some guy on the lacrosse team starts pounding on a kid in the D5 hallway. Now, this kid happens to be a dork, no question, but he's harmless, and the lacrosse player outweighs him by like 40 pounds. Still, a crowd is just standing around watching this so-called fight, which is really just a mugging. There are dudes way bigger than me, major knuckle-draggers, cheering and yelling. Not one of them makes a move to stop the beating. So I throw down my book bag, jump on Larry Lacrosse, and hook my right arm around his neck. Pretty soon his face goes purple and his eyes bulge out like a constipated bullfrog's. That's when a couple of his teammates pull me off and one of the PE teachers rushes in to break up the tangle. Nobody gets suspended, not even a detention, which is typical. The dorky kid, the one who is getting pounded, I didn't know his name. The lacrosse guy turns out to be a Kyle something. We've got like 7 Kyles at our school, and I can't keep track of them all. This one comes up to me later, between 6th and 7th period, and says he's going to kick my butt. Then one of his friends grabs his arm and whispers, "Easy, dude, that's the psycho with the rattler in his locker." I smile my best psycho smile, and Kyle disappears. Big, tough jock who likes to beat up kids half his size. Pathetic. But lots of people are terrified of snakes. It's called ophidiophobia. The experts say it's a deep, primal fear. I wouldn't know. During 7th period, I get pulled out of class by the school resource officer, which is what they call the sheriff's deputy who hangs out in the main office. His name is Thickley, and technically, he's in charge of campus security. He's big and friendly, cruising toward retirement. "Billy, I'm going to ask you straight up," he says in the hallway. "There's a rumor you've got a snake in your locker. A rattlesnake." "A live rattler?" I laugh. "That's crazy." "Can we have a look?" "No problem. Who's we?" "Me, just myself." "Sure, Officer Thickley. You don't need to ask first." "Oh, I always ask," he says. "See, if I show respect for the students, they'll show respect for me. It's a two-way street." "Be my guest," I tell him. "You can just pop the lock, right?" "I'd like you to come along with me." "But I really can't miss this class," I say. "Mrs. Bowers is reviewing for the final."
"Please, Billy, I'm not a fan of snakes."
We walk down the hallway to my locker. Thickley stands at least 10 feet behind me while I open the door. "Here you go," I say.
"Holy crap!"
"It's not real, man." I dangle the rubber snake, its tail jiggling. "See? Just a toy." The color returns to Thickley's face. I bought the joke snake for like $3 at a party store. It's black and skinny and doesn't look anything like a diamondback rattler. They had it on the same aisle with the fake vomit and dog poop.
"Billy, why have you got that thing in there?"
"Because other kids keep breaking in and messing with my stuff. You knew Jammer, right? This was his locker before he got expelled."
"Oh," says Thickley. "Then we should get you a different one."
"No necesito."
"But the locker still smells like Jammer's stuff."
"Is that what stinks so bad?" Thickley says.
"I'll get you a can of Febreze."
You're probably thinking, this is a disturbed young man. Based on what happened with me and the rattler, right? But I've been catching snakes since I was a little kid, and I know what I'm doing. Usually I don't handle the poisonous ones because a split-second mistake will put you in an ambulance speeding to the ER. You might not die from the bite, but from what they say, the pain is extreme. Right now at home, I've got a corn snake, a king snake, two yellow rat snakes, and a banded water snake, all non-venomous. I can't say harmless because the water snake is mean and nasty. Honestly, the rattler was way easier to handle. I never keep a snake for more than a week or two. They stay out in the garage inside dry aquarium tanks with lids that screw down tight. My mother isn't thrilled about the arrangement, but she's gotten used to it. She says it's safer than wakeboarding or base jumping, neither of which is on my list of future hobbies. A wild snake won't hurt anybody as long as you give it some space. That's true for rattlers, same as the others. What is wrong with you? My sister often says. This is never a question. These aren't normal pets. They're not pets, Belinda. I don't own them. At least a puppy gives you love. A snake gives you nothing but a blank stare. My sister, the comedian. In a few months, she's leaving for college, Cornell University in Ithaca, New York. Big time school. Good for her. Belinda says she's looking forward to northern winters, but she hasn't got a clue. Like me, she has spent her entire life in Florida, the place everybody up north wants to be every January. She didn't know about the rattlesnake, of course. Neither did Mom. They steer clear of my aquarium tanks in the garage. I'm holding the king snake when Mom pokes her head out the door and says, "What happened at school today, Billy? Put that creepy thing away and come inside." Turns out the dorky kid, Chin is his last name, he friended my mother on Facebook. Who does that? He sent her a message thanking me for saving him from the beatdown in D5. He said nobody's ever stuck up for him before. See, this is why I'm not on social media. Way too much human contact. Why didn't you tell me about this? Mom asks.
'Cause it was no big deal.
Fighting is too a big deal. You've got a week left of school before summer. Can you please try not to get kicked out?
They won't kick me out, Mom. I've got straight A's.
But what if you'd hurt that other boy? Only thing I hurt was his shiny blonde ego. She sighs. We've had this discussion, Billy.
What? I'm supposed to turn the other way when I see something bad going down?
No, of course not, no. What you should do is immediately report it to a teacher, or run to the office and tell somebody. That's how cases of bullying are supposed to be handled. It says so in the school code of conduct.
I have to chuckle. I'm not trying to disrespect my mother, but seriously, the code of conduct? Kyle the lacrosse star was punching that poor kid in the head. Come on. Next day, I noticed Chin eating by himself in the cafeteria. He's got a bruised eye and white gauze taped over one ear. He never looks up from his lunch tray, so he doesn't see me. I walk straight to the lacrosse kid's table, sit down next to Kyle, and start eating my ham and fried egg sandwich. He just glares at me. It's not what you'd call a bonding moment. One of Kyle's jock friends tells me to move to another table.
Ah, but you guys are so cool, I say. I want to be just like you. Talk the same cool way, wear the same cool clothes, hang with the same cool girls. It's truly an honor to sit with you here at your special cool table. Seriously, this lunch is the high point of my entire life. And they thought they were pros at sarcasm.
Move it, snake boy! The kid barks.
I can't help but laugh. Is this what they're calling me now?
So you guys are into reptiles too? I put down the sandwich, whip out my phone. Kyle's angry, but nervous at the same time. Doesn't say a word.
I Google a picture of a wild hog hunter who got bitten by a diamondback over near Yeehaw Junction. That's a real place. You can look it up. The hog hunter's arm is swollen thick as a pine stump. His fingers look like boiled purple sausages. I hold up the phone so that Kyle and his all-jock posse can see the photo. That's what can happen, I say, when you're not careful. Kyle goes pale and edges back his chair.
Dude, you are a total psycho.
Can I have the rest of your Doritos? I ask pleasantly. They all get up, snatch their trays, and walk off, Kyle in the lead. FYI, that hog hunter didn't die from the snake bite. He was back in the woods a month later, but way more careful. Kyle won't bother Chin again. That's my guess. The night before the last day of school, Mom's in the kitchen working on the household budget. She has a yellow notebook, two sharpened pencils, and a calculator. I noticed the monthly check from my father on the table. His name is printed on it, but no address. Mom doesn't care if we see the check, but she always cuts up the mailing envelope and throws away the pieces, which I later dig out of the garbage can and try to tape back together. Usually it's impossible, because the snipped pieces are as small as confetti, but on this particular night, she must have been in a hurry with the scissors. When she's not looking, I collect the fragments of the envelope and smuggle them to my room. This time, they fit together like a miniature jigsaw puzzle, and it's easy to read the return address printed in the upper left-hand corner. So I walk back to the kitchen and say, Mom, how much is a plane ticket to Montana? What are you talking about? I show her the taped-together envelope. She frowns. We can't go anywhere this summer. I've got a brand new job here, remember? They've got Uber cars in Montana. I doubt that, Mom says. Uber tractors, maybe. My sister and I don't approve of her working for a car service app because it's so dangerous on the roads. Florida has possibly the worst drivers in the universe. Also, the most trigger-happy. But Mom said she was bored with accounting and wanted a job where she could meet new people every day. Let me fly out there by myself, I tell her. I can pay for it from my savings.
And where would you stay?
With Dad. Where else?
But he didn't invite you, Billy.
I'm inviting myself.
Mom looks sad. He's got a whole new life now, honey.
That's bull, I say. Just because you get a new zip code doesn't mean you get a new life. Look at us.
She closes her eyes for a moment, then says, I wish I could let you go, but it's not a great idea. He got remarried.
Doesn't he still ask about me and Belinda?
I send him pictures.
That's it?
Let's not talk about this now, Billy.
Back in my room, I go online to check the balance of my bank account. $633.24. This is what I've saved up from Christmases and birthday presents, and also from working at Publix for 5 weekends until I couldn't stand it anymore. Bagging groceries requires friendly conversation with strangers, which I'm not especially good at. Truthfully, I'm surprised I've got so much cash in the bank. There's a travel site offering $542 round-trip tickets from Orlando to Bozeman, Montana. So I write Mom a check and slip it into her handbag after she goes to bed. Then I borrow her credit card to order the plane ticket off the airline's website. The last day of school is short because I've got only one final exam in algebra. I'm done at noon, and Mom is waiting in the parking lot. She found my check in her purse, and she's angry.
You are not going to Montana, she declares.
It's a non-refundable ticket.
Don't be a smartass, Billy. I don't even have your father's phone number.
Then how do you know he's married?
He told me in a letter. This was a few years ago.
Were you mad?
I'm mad he doesn't call you guys, that's all.
And you seriously have no idea what he does for a living?
Mom sighs. He says he's working for the government, whatever that means.
How come you never told me?
Because I was embarrassed, I didn't know more.
I reach over and squeeze her arm. If he doesn't want to see me, I'll come straight home. That's a promise. She says,
this is all my fault.
Please don't cry, it's just a plane ride. But she knows better than that. So do I. Too much time has passed. I need to talk to the man. That evening, I take the snakes out of their tanks and put them in pillowcases, which I knot snugly at the open ends. My mother drives me down Grapefruit Road until I find the right place to stop. She stays in the car, as any normal person would, while I walk into the trees, open the pillowcases, and free the snakes. I'd waited until dark so they could crawl away safely. Most hawks don't hunt at night. Another piece of information you'll probably never need. The next morning, Mom takes me to the airport. I've told her I spoke to my father, and he's excited about my visit. Not true. I'd spent an hour on the internet, but couldn't find a phone number anywhere. All I have is the return address on that envelope. And now, I'm getting on an airplane, flying across the country to meet a man who might not even want to see me. Brilliant.
2.
My family moves around so much because Mom has a weird rule. We've got to live near a bald eagle nest, and by near, my mother means 15 minutes max. She's totally obsessed with these birds, which I agree are pretty impressive. Still, it's a strange way to arrange your life. You can go online and look up all the active nests in the state. Mom always picks one close to a good school district, and that's the neighborhood where she buys a house. Sunday is our eagle watching day. The nests are usually at the top of a tall dead tree. Mom, Belinda, and I each carry our own pair of binoculars. Like I said, we're not poor, and for an hour or two, we'll just sit on the hood of the car, looking up at the birds.
They mate for life,
Mom often whispers. Many do, but some don't. I leave that subject alone. Florida baldies usually don't migrate north once they find a mate. After the babies grow up and leave, the mother and father birds sometimes fly off. I've explained to Mom that they often build more than one nest, but she always starts worrying if they don't show up again after a few days. She thinks they got sick from eating fish in polluted water, or somebody took a shot at them. Those things do happen, but there are times when eagles go away just because they're in a mood to explore. Then the nest starts to crumble, and pretty soon, you're staring up at an empty heap of sticks and dead branches. Before long, Mom starts tap-tapping on her laptop again, searching for a new nest to adopt. Next thing I know, the house goes up for sale, a moving van appears, and we're on our way to another eagle town. In the time since my father left, we've lived in Key Largo, Clearwater, Everglades City, Punta Gorda, and now Fort Pierce. Of all those places, Everglades City was my favorite, because it's surrounded by wilderness, or the closest thing to wilderness that's left in Florida. We stayed there 2 years and 3 months, until the nest was blown down by a funnel cloud, which is basically a tornado over water. The nest was a short boat ride from our house, and on Sundays, a neighbor would loan us his skiff to go see the eagles. They usually had 2 babies, both fledged and gone by midsummer. It was the first weekend of October when the funnel cloud dropped out of a thunderhead on Chokoloski Bay and shredded the nest. After that, we didn't see the mother and father birds again, though I doubt they died in the storm. Baldies are tough. They probably just made a new nest somewhere else. Mom didn't want to talk about it. She was so bummed. I thought of a plan to cheer her up so we could stay in Everglade City, but it sort of backfired, and she sold the house anyway. The night we took down the for sale sign, I bagged up my snakes and let them go near a gravel road off the Tamiami Trail. Mom waited in the car with the doors locked. That's our routine. On the morning I'm leaving to see my father, the last thing she says at the airport is, "Billy, please don't bring back anything alive."
"You mean like snakes?"
"I mean anything that needs a bag or a cage," she says, and kisses me on the cheek. "You can't fly straight from Florida to Montana, so I've got to change planes in Atlanta. A skinny guy wearing a Delta name tag is waiting to walk me to the new gate, even though I tell him I can find my own way, which isn't true because the airport is ridiculously huge and confusing. The jet going to Montana is larger than the first one. Sitting beside me is a woman who smells like the bacon cheeseburger she gorped while we were waiting to take off. Her husband is reading a book about World War II on his tablet. I spend the entire flight with my face at the window. It feels like I'm gliding through an IMAX movie. We pass directly above the Mississippi River, winding and broad and muddy. After that, it's the Great Plains, checkerboards of gold and green. Some of the farm fields are cut in humongous, perfect circles. But the best sight by far is the Rocky Mountains. From the sky, the first thing you notice is the foothills, which look like the bony brown knuckles of a giant. Then suddenly these amazing peaks appear, bright and jagged, with clouds wisping along steep ridgelines. Even in June, the mountain tops are still white. I'm totally jacked because I've never seen snow before. The Bozeman Airport is laid out next to a towering row of white-capped crests. After we land, a flight attendant asks me to stay in my seat until the other passengers get off. I can't figure out what I've done to get myself in trouble. Once the plane is empty, the flight attendant leads me down the jet bridge into the terminal building. "Your uncle's waiting right there," she says, pointing to a young bearded dude wearing black jeans and a hoodie. I've never seen him before in my life. She hands him some papers to sign, then nods goodbye to me. I look at the bearded guy and say, "I didn't know I had any uncles." He grins. "Just go with it." Apparently, kids my age aren't allowed to travel alone unless an approved adult is meeting them when the plane lands. My mom has a friend whose nephew attends Montana State, and that's who was waiting at the airport. Mom didn't tell me ahead of time, probably because she didn't want me to arrive with an attitude. I sure don't need a babysitter. The guy's name is Kurt, and he tells me he's majoring in middle childhood education.
"Perfect," I say.
"So I'm giving you a ride to Livingston?"
"Is that far?"
Kurt chuckles. "In Montana, there's no such thing as far. People drive 6 hours to a Little League game, and it's no big deal. Livingston's only 30 minutes on the interstate."
The first part of the car ride is almost as unreal as the flight, the highway climbing and dipping through valleys of bright green timber. Every third word out of my mouth is "wow," so it's obvious to Kurt that I've never been out of Florida. We zigzag through a steep pass called Bear Canyon, and like an idiot, I ask him if it has any bears.
Yeah, lots of them," he says. "I'd love to see a grizzly."
"Ha, you and 2 jillion other tourists. I know lots of people born and raised here that have never laid eyes on one."
"How about you?"
"Nope."
"Maybe I'll get lucky," I say.
Kurt tells me about a roadside attraction that features captive grizzlies. The biggest of the show bears has appeared in major movies.
"The place is just a few miles ahead," he says. "They're amazing critters. You want to stop?"
"Thanks, but I'd rather see a wild one."
Well, they don't hang out in Livingston.
They do in Yellowstone Park, I say.
For sure. Major grizz country. My dad's gonna take me there. We see any bears, I'll text you a picture.
Yeah, right, says Kurt.
The house is on Geyser Street. It's pale gray with navy blue shutters. There is a genuine picket fence in front, a neatly planted garden, and a porch with a wooden swing. I'm a long, long way from Florida. Two bicycles are propped against the fence. I wonder if Kurt dropped me at the wrong place, so I double-check the address on my father's envelope. It matches the number on the mailbox. I wheel my suitcase up to the front door and knock. A girl answers. She has long, straight brown hair and matching eyes, and she's a little taller than me.
I'm looking for Mr. Dickens, I say. Dennis Dickens.
The girl sighs.
Oh, brother. Come on in.
What's wrong?
I said come in, brother.
I drag my bag inside. The girl's name is Summer Chasing Hawks. It turns out I'm actually her stepbrother. She says my dad sort of married her mother a few years earlier.
He's not here, Summer informs me.
When will he be back?
You want some lemonade? Mom's floating the river over near Billings. She won't be home till dinner time.
Summer goes to the kitchen and returns with two cans of Pepsi.
No more lemonade. Sorry,
she says, tossing me one of the cans.
We're Absaluki Indians, which you probably never heard of. Nowadays they call us Crow. My mom met your dad on the res. His drone crash-landed on our trailer.
Aren't the Crows the ones who nailed General Custer?
Nope, our tribe was on the other end of that deal. We sent scouts to help the U.S. soldiers.
She shrugs.
Back then we had major issues with the Lakotas.
I sit beside an orange tabby on a chewed-up sofa. The cat is old and twitchy, with a bald patch on its rump. There's also a weird-looking mutt sniffing around. It looks half Labrador and half Greyhound, a bad combination of goofy and fast. Summer says the dog's name is Satan.
It used to be Sparky, she adds, until he ate Mom's favorite boots.
I'd really like to see my dad. Do you know where he went?
I predicted you'd show up here one day, Billy.
Is that why he took off? I ask. Because he found out I was coming?
He travels for his job. Something came up, short notice.
Summer finishes off her Pepsi and crumples the can. The windows of the house stand open, and the air feels cool and dry. On one wall hang some framed photographs of my father and his new family. Dad's hair looks lighter than mine, and in some of the photos, he's got a scraggly goatee. I don't think I look anything like him, but Summer says she definitely sees a resemblance.
I knew who you were the minute I opened the door, she says, nodding.
It sucks he's not here. I flew all the way from Florida.
Then your arms must be really tired.
She shrugs and smiles.
Old joke. Bad joke. Sorry about that.
Can I hang out until your mom gets home? I need to ask her some questions.
Of course you can hang here, Billy. Where else would you go?
We walk down to the Yellowstone. I can hear it from blocks away, which is wild. Florida rivers are so lazy and quiet that you can barely tell the water's moving. Summer says the Yellowstone is running high and dirty because of heavy snowmelt from the mountains. Standing on the bank, I see the pure power of the racing current. I toss a stick and watch it vanish downstream. The sun is dipping behind the mountains, and the air's getting colder. Back at the house, Summer stacks a few logs in the fireplace and lets me light the kindling.
What exactly does my father do?
I ask. His job description, I mean.
My mother says he does something for the government, but she's not sure what.
You never asked him?
I haven't seen the man since I was little, or talked to him.
Summer looks honestly surprised.
He's never once called?
Nope, but he always sends a check.
Which arrives by the 10th of every month, right? $5,000.
It feels weird talking about this kind of stuff, about the money my family gets, with a girl I hardly know.
So, Dad must have told you, I say.
Summer, chasing hawks, sits forward and holds her hands close to the fire.
Billy boy, she says, I'm the one who writes those checks.
I hadn't wanted to leave Everglades City. Belinda said she was ready for a change, ready for a town with an outlet mall.
Not me. There weren't many snakes in the salty mangroves, but I could ride my bike to plenty of places that were loaded.
Once I went fishing in a canal where I saw a python and an alligator trying to eat each other. The battle went on for like 3 days until finally they both gave up and swam away. True story. I got video to prove it. After the funnel cloud trashed the eagle nest, I came up with a scheme to calm my mother so we wouldn't have to move. This was the plan that backfired. One afternoon, I asked to borrow her laptop.
Why, Billy?
You'll see. A couple of clicks later, we're watching a mother eagle feed tiny pieces of gnawed catfish to her baby. It was live streaming from a nest at the National Arboretum in Washington, D.C. The website said the nest was on top of a poplar tree. Suddenly, the father baldy showed up with another fish, which he dropped into the nest beside the mother. The baby eaglet was small and fuzzy, a ball of gray lint.
Hey, look, there's another egg, Mom exclaimed.
There were tears on her cheeks. She was so excited. We spotted a hairline crack in the other egg.
That one's starting to hatch too, I said.
I know. This is so amazing.
See, Mom, we don't have to keep moving. They've got these eagle cams all over the country. You can watch them anytime you want.
Really?
And you can see way more on the video than you can with a pair of binoculars, right? I mean, this is like being inside the nest. It's like being one of the birds.
Her eyes were riveted to the screen of her laptop.
Billy, I'm worried about that other egg.
Oh no, I thought. Here she goes again.
Eagle eggs don't always hatch at the same time, I reminded her. Sometimes one is late.
Relax, Mom, I've read up on this. She didn't sleep or leave the house for days. You couldn't pry the laptop from her hands. Belinda did the cooking. I took care of the laundry. Mom chewed her fingernails down so far that she needed band-aids. I was at school on the morning the second eaglet finally hatched. When I got home, my mother was snoring on the sofa, hugging the laptop. Belinda and I helped her to bed. That night, she bought fresh stone crabs and threw a little party just for the three of us. We toasted the baby eagle with Gatorade. The next afternoon, Mom was crying again. She said the big eaglet was being mean to the newborn.
That's totally normal. They're just fussing, I said.
Don't worry. The mama bird won't let anything bad happen.
But Billy, she's not in the nest all the time. When she's out hunting with the papa bird, she can't keep an eye on those babies.
Here, let me see. I took her laptop and walked to the kitchen, where, accidentally on purpose, I dropped it on the floor. My clever plan had flopped. I should have known Mom would get totally obsessed. After her laptop came back from the repair shop, I rigged the parental controls to block out all eagle cams. I did this for her own peace of mind. Otherwise, she would have been glued day and night to those websites. Basically, a bird-watching zombie. Soon afterward, we moved to Fort Pierce, where we live now.
The nest she'd found here was in a half-dead Australian pine on the shore of the Indian River Lagoon. The good thing was, from the ground, you couldn't see the eaglets until they grew taller than the edge of the nest. By then, they were fairly big and strong, so Mom couldn't get too worried about them. Best of all, the mother and father birds stayed in the area after the young ones fledged and flew off in the spring. That means we won't have to leave again for a while, unless the nest gets wrecked by another storm. "You've got bald eagles out here, right?" I ask Summer, chasing hawks. "Sure. Goldens, too. They're even badder than baldies. I'd like to get a picture of one, for my mother." "Maybe you'll luck out. Also, I want to see a wild grizzly bear." Summer chuckles and says, "Montana ain't Disney World. You don't just buy a ticket and stand in line for the show." "You ever seen one?"
"A grizz? Yep."
"Really? Where, in Yellowstone?"
"He was dead in a creek," she says with a glum shrug. "There wasn't much left."
She places another log on the fire.
"What happened to him?"
I ask.
"Who knows?" Summer says. "Maybe a bigger bear got him, or maybe it was old age. Survival of the fittest, Billy."
Right now, I'd rather talk about bears and eagles than about my father. Summer told me he'd put her in charge of his checkbook because she was good at math. She said he's got plenty of money, and he's very generous to her and her mom. He told them he works for a security agency of the government, a drone program he's not allowed to talk about. To me, it sounds like baloney. And even if it were true, why would you let a kid sign your name on all your checks? I don't share these doubts with Summer, but my mind is buzzing with sketch theories about what Mr. Dennis Dickens actually does for a living. He could be a bank robber, for all they know, or a cyber hacker, maybe even a dope dealer. "Where do golden eagles live?" I ask Summer.
"High on cliffs. They eat gophers and jackrabbits."
"Snakes, too?"
"No doubt."
And the fires glow. She looks a lot younger than me, her face as smooth and round as a doll's. The patchy old cat jumps in her lap, and the goofy-looking dog curls up at her feet.
"Stop worrying," Summer says. "Your dad's a good guy. If he wasn't, my mom would have dumped him a long time ago."
"Did he say where he was going on his trip?" I ask.
"He never does. His missions are always, like, top secret."
"But doesn't that make you wonder?"
"He always comes home. That's all that matters."
3. Summer's mother says her crow name is Little Thunder Sky. "But everyone calls me Lil," she adds. "Have some more mashed potatoes." I'm starving, so I basically inhale everything on the plate. My stomach is still on East Coast Florida time, which is 10:30 at night. For dinner, Lil grilled buffalo sliders, possibly the best burgers ever. At the table, not a word is spoken about my father. Lil wears her long hair in braids, and her face has a permanent raccoon stripe from wearing sunglasses all the time. She looks about the same age as my mom. Summer told me she's a professional trout guide, rows a drift boat down the rivers. "Did you catch anything today?" I ask.
6 nice rainbows and a fat old cutthroat."
"Wow, are they good eating?" Lil laughs.
"They're all swimming in the river. I'm strictly catch and release." "Fly rodders only," Summer adds proudly. "No worm slingers allowed."
I don't know how to cast an artificial fly, but I've watched lots of videos and always wanted to learn.
"The sports I had on the boat, they couldn't hit the water with a brick," says Lil. "It's a miracle we landed anything."
"They're from Indianapolis. One's a dentist and the other owns a chain of funeral homes. But, hey, it's a payday. And they had some funny stories, believe it or not."
"You're in the funeral business?" I say. "You better have a sense of humor."
"So true." Lil cuts up the last remaining slider and feeds it to Satan the dog. The creaky old cat shows no interest at all. It's almost embarrassing to admit that Lil and Summer are the first two Native Americans I've met. They don't seem so different, not that I was expecting them to live in teepees or stitch deerskin moccasins. I haven't read up on the Crow Nation yet, but I know what happened to most Indian tribes in the Old West. That's not a subject for a guest like me to bring up. After Summer and I clear the dishes, we join Lil by the fireplace. She says, "I'm sorry Dennis isn't here. You came a long, long way, Billy. Last time I saw him, I was 3 years old, maybe four. I don't even remember what his voice sounds like."
"Doesn't it make you mad he hasn't called?" Summer asks.
"It makes me curious, that's all. And, okay, maybe a little angry." Lil folds her hands on her lap. "Well, here's the story of how your dad came into our lives. It was a Saturday morning, springtime, a few years ago. I was home tying some trout flies.
And I was finishing an art project for elementary school," Summer cuts in.
"When all of a sudden, bang, the whole trailer shook, so I knew it was too big to be a bird. Sometimes robins get confused and crash into the windows, but this was a different kind of bang. So I run outside, and there's a major dent in the wall and this broken thing on the ground. I didn't know what the heck it was. There were four little propellers and plastic wings.
And a camera," Summer says, "like a GoPro, only bigger."
"I'd never seen a drone before," Lil goes on. "Anyhow, we pick up the parts and take them inside the trailer. Before long, there's a knock on the door. It's Dennis, your dad. Blue jeans, flannel shirt, hiking boots. He's holding something that's beeping, which turns out to be the remote control. He says he lost his aircraft. That was the word he used. And I say, 'Aircraft? You mean that silly toy helicopter?' His face gets all serious and he goes, 'It's not a toy, ma'am.' So I point to the kitchen table where we'd laid out the plastic pieces of his wrecked drone, and he says, 'Oh no!' I mean, the poor guy looked like his heart was shattered." Summer says, "Cut to the hot romance part, Mama." "So I invited him to stay for lunch. Pork sandwiches and coleslaw. He asked me out. I said no thanks. Afterward, he kept calling and calling until finally I ran out of excuses. We dated a few months, and then he asked us to move in with him here in Livingston, me and Summer."
"Was it hard to leave the reservation?" I ask.
"I've always liked this town, and the school's good."
Summer says, "Life on the res can be challenging."
"What did my dad tell you about his actual job?" I ask Lil. "Some sort of surveillance work for the government. They bought him a new drone right away. Dennis says the less we know, the better. As you can imagine, Billy, after all that's happened, our tribe doesn't have a whole lot of trust in your government. Originally, they left the Crow Nation with 38 million acres. Know what it is today? 1/10 that size. They stole back the rest and paid us 5 lousy cents an acre."
"That sucks," I say,
possibly the understatement of the century. "But we don't see your dad as the government," Lil adds. "He's a good, honest man."
Summer nods. "He'd never hurt anybody."
"Nice to know. I'd really like to see him," I say. "He checks in every few days to let us know he's okay," says Lil. "He's never gone long, Billy. A week at the most."
"Can we try to call him now?"
"I already did. His phone's off. That's not unusual."
I've got lots more questions, but I'm tired. The fire is beginning to die, the embers popping and hissing. Lil says I should take the spare bedroom. Satan follows me through the door, flops down on the rug, and farts. Before saying goodnight, Summer comes in and turns on the baseboard heaters, because, she says, "You Florida boys have thin blood." The temperature tonight is supposed to drop to 45 degrees, and it's June. Lying in bed under a homemade quilt, I wait for Mom's goodnight phone call. I texted her after the plane landed, but we haven't had time to talk. She's been out on Uber jobs all day. First thing she asks, "So, how's your father?" "I haven't seen him yet. He's off on a business trip."
"But you told me he knew you were coming."
"He got called away at the last minute," I say. When you're not used to lying, it's easy to get tripped up. I can't tell whether Mom believes what I'm saying.
"What kind of business trip?" she asks.
"The usual, I guess."
"There's nothing usual about your father. Did you find out what his actual job is?"
"I met his family. They're really nice."
A beat passes before Mom says, "You mean family as in children?"
"His wife and stepdaughter," I say. "They're Crow Indians."
"Oh, wow."
"I know, right?"
Another beat. Then, "So, you like Montana?"
"It's a great big place," I say. "That's for sure."
Mom hasn't remarried after the divorce. She's gone out with a few guys, and as far as I could tell, none of them were total jerks. Belinda's favorite was a piano teacher named James, who could play jazz, rock, and classical. One night, he brought his electric keyboard to the house and put on a show. My mother clapped politely, but we could tell she wasn't exactly enchanted. The guy I liked best drove an airboat, taking tourists through the Everglades. One time, he gave me a ride up and down the Lopez River. His name was William, and he only had 8 fingers. He'd lost both thumbs in the propeller of his airboat in separate accidents. Mom informed us she wasn't in the market for a clumsy boyfriend. These days, she doesn't go out on many dates. I've asked her if it's hard being single with 2 kids, and she says Belinda and I are a blessing because we scare off the men who are selfish and shallow. The last thing they want is an instant family, she says. I don't mind not having a stepfather, though I know Mom gets lonely at times. She'll never admit this, because in her mind, loneliness is a sign of weakness. You might be wondering, what kind of mother lets her son fly 2,000 miles to meet a man he doesn't even remember? To be honest, I was surprised Mom didn't put up more of an argument. But here's my theory. She's still looking for answers about what went wrong with their marriage. Letting me go to Montana is the next best thing to going there herself, which her pride wouldn't allow. At midnight, she calls back to chat some more. It's 2 a.m. Florida time. "Did I wake you, Billy?"
She did, but I say, "No, what's up?"
"Listen, at the first sniff of trouble, you grab a cab to the airport and come home."
"Yes, Mom." Like they have flights every hour.
"I don't care how nice his new family might be. If you don't get the straight story from Mr. Dennis Dickens, I want you out of there. Is that understood?"
"Don't worry," I say. After she calms down, Mom tells me that my sister landed a summer job as a cashier at TJ Maxx. We talk about how weird and quiet it will be around the house after Belinda goes off to college.
"I went out to see the Eagles today," Mom says.
She sounds wide awake. Unbelievable. I can barely hold my eyes open.
"One of them caught a fish. I think it was a snook."
"Yummy," I try to say, but the word comes out like a caveman's grunt. The wind is rattling the window of the bedroom, and the baseboard heater is making a ticking noise.
"I should let you go to sleep," she says.
"Yeah, I'm beat."
"First, I need to ask you something, Billy. What does she look like? Your dad's new wife?"
I'm not really comfortable with the question. "She's brown," I say.
"Don't be a smartass. She's Native American, so of course she's brown."
"No, I mean really brown. She's out on the river all the time."
"What for?"
Mom asks. "Because she's a fishing guide. She's got her own boat and everything. She rows 10-12 miles every day, sometimes more. For a couple of moments, my mother doesn't say anything. Then,
that's pretty cool, I've got to admit. What's her name?
Little Thunder Sky.
No way! How beautiful is that?
She wants everyone to call her Lil.
A request you will honor. Is she young?
Same age as you, I say. So, yes, she's young. My mother likes that answer.
Little Thunder Sky. Wow, she says. That's mountain poetry.
Mom, I need to ask you something. Why'd you always cut up the envelopes that Dad's checks came in?
Because that's not how I wanted you to find out where he was. I wanted him to be the one to tell you,
she says.
I wanted him to want you to come see him, but he never asked.
I'm going to find out why.
Call me tomorrow. Love you, Billy.
I lie there listening to the low whistle of the wind outside. Satan jumps in bed with me, and I don't have the heart to kick him out. Both of us are sound asleep in about 2 minutes. The next morning, Summer makes cheese omelets and bacon for breakfast. Lil packs a lunch. We load the cooler in her boat, which is hooked to her SUV, a blue Ford Explorer. It's chilly outside, so Summer loans me a fleece that belongs to my dad. The arms are too long, but I don't care. It's warm. Lil drives to a ramp called Mayor's Landing, where she backs the boat into the water all by herself. She tells me to get in the bow, except I'm not sure which end is which, since there's no motor. Summer finds this hilarious. Before we shove off, Lil gives me a quick lesson with a fly rod. She makes casting look incredibly easy, but when it's my turn, I promptly snag myself in the back of the head with the streamer fly. It doesn't hurt at all when Lil tugs the hook from my scalp because she'd already bent down the barb to do less harm to the fish. She tells me to keep casting. I'm expecting a sarcastic comment from Summer, but she restrains herself. The river is a breathtaking obstacle course. Gravel beds, boulders, snags, stumps of massive dead trees. We glide through all of it, untouched. Lil rows from the middle seat, and she's totally pro with oars, steering the boat with one dip at a time. Summer lounges in the stern, reading a book. Can we try calling Dad again? I ask Lil.
Sure. Summer, would you dial for Billy?
Summer puts down her book and takes out her phone.
Straight to voicemail,
she reports, and lets me listen. It's an automated recording, not Dad's voice. I end the call without leaving a message. Does he do this on all his trips? I ask.
99% of the time there's no cell service where he's at,
Lil explains. I cast the streamer fly snug to the shoreline, and something grabs it underwater. I jerk back hard, too hard, and the thin monofilament line snaps.
Major brown trout, Summer says.
I bow my head and reel up. Lil beaches the boat on a gravel bed and ties another fly on my rig. Overhead, I hear a familiar cry, an osprey, just like the ones we have in Florida. Lil points out a second bird perched high in a cottonwood tree. Like eagles, ospreys often work in pairs, and they hunt by sight. It's hard for them to find fish on days like today, when the water is cloudy. I'm casting like a crazed robot again, hoping for a strike from another big fish. I need to figure all this out, I say to Lil. Who does Dad work for? The CIA? FBI?
Don't think we haven't asked, Billy.
After an hour, I finally catch something, a slippery little rainbow trout as bright as chrome. The splashes of rosy color on its sides look hand-painted. I've never seen anything like it, and all I can do is stare. Lil gently unhooks the fish, and it's gone in a flash, literally. Later, we stop to eat lunch on the shady side of the river. A flock of white pelicans floats past. This species, possibly the very same birds we're watching, migrates all the way to Florida Bay every winter. Summer and her mother smile at each other when I tell them that. Look it up, I say, if you don't believe me. After lunch, the wind starts gusting, which makes it way harder to cast. Still, I manage to land two more